just as a reminder, you know, you can always park out here and do the freebie parking, and it's closer, and that's usually what we do, but you will get a ticket if it's over 2 inches or somewhere in there, okay? So take advantage of the 515 lot and go over there, okay? You don't need that ticket, because what they do is they ticket and immediately call for a tow. Okay, so it's not like, oh, well, I'll get a ticket, it's not that big of a deal. Well, you'll not have your car, and you have to go find it. So anyway, I hope you had a Merry Christmas. Everybody do okay? Did you clean house? Take it all in? Did you have to buy somebody off this year? Brittany, did you have to buy off Sean this year? Every year? I know. You're just always indebted to Sean, aren't you? Yeah. We know different. Was that out loud? Sometimes, you know. Well, it's great to see everybody. I'm feeling much better. This last week has been, you know, when you've been really sick and then you get better, just like you're on top of the world, you know, and you can sing songs like you're on the Titanic and, you know, things like that. And you suddenly realize this is why people sing these songs, you know. And then after that week, you're like, I don't really care about life. You know, but that 1 week, man, it's really great. So this has been a good week for me. And I've been so appreciative because I didn't get to eat any of the holiday stuff at my mom and dad's. Food was repulsive because I was so sick. And so this week it's been like, oh, sugar cookies? Sure, I'll take 10 of those. And, you know, so my favorite are the you get the Hershey's Kiss in the cookie. You know what I'm talking about? The peanut butter cookie. Oh, man. That's good stuff. And so I enjoyed several of those this last week and had a lot of fun getting a chance to actually celebrate this time of the year. So I trust that you've had that and at least had some sort of enjoyment and fun this time of year. But also, I hope that you've had a little bit of reflection. And I hope that you've taken in the true meaning of Christmas. And sometimes it's easy to skim across that and say, yeah, I'm a Christian. Yeah, I know all that stuff. And you become so familiar with the Christmas story that you lose the meaning. And my prayer is for you, as well as myself and my family, that while we do all those things, and those things are wonderful and great, that we don't skim the surface and that we don't become so familiar with the story that it just becomes like any other story. And my prayer each year has been for me that maybe I discover something new with Christmas that I hadn't seen before. And maybe there's something that comes alive, or maybe there's a ministry or a way that I can serve someone else that it makes Christmas memorable versus next year at this time that you go, what did I get last year? You remember that? You know, we've all been through those times. It's like, hey, what did we do? What did we go? I want it to be memorable, but just not memorable with necessarily a gift, if you know what I mean. I want it to be memorable with a sense of meaning more than just a gift. So my prayer for each and every one of us has been that that's what you have found this Christmas season. So we're going to be in Matthew chapter 14. Verses 22 to 33, Matthew 14, verses 22 to 33. They're in the Bibles in front of you. It's page 835, okay? Page 835. Let me ask you this question this morning. If you were to define your life in one to two sentences, what would it be about? If you were to define your life in one to two sentences, what would it be about? In other words, what's the end game? Okay? Well, what's the end game? Not this thing of, you know, where do you see yourself in 10 years? Okay? That usually has to do with job and location and geography and all that other stuff, okay? But if you were to define your life, in other words, regardless of what happens with your job, all right, regardless of where you end up geography-wise, that shouldn't change, okay? Too much that, but it might change it in where you're living it out. But in one to two sentences, what is your life all about? And what I wanted to talk about this morning as we kind of conclude 2009, which I'm really ready to get rid of 2009. I don't put it on my all-time favorite list, okay? Playing down the hits of 2009, number one, you know. If you're like me, you know, the hits just were like, the hits just keep on coming is not in a positive always sense, but sometimes negative. So I'm kind of ready to say, thank you, 2009. Let's open up 2010 and let's see what happens there. But I wanted to talk to you this morning about focus. And focus sometimes has to be done in light of the past. Because if you're not careful, you're going to be like what I've done a few times, and I'm sure you've never done it before, but it's just me, where you think, I'm going to do something different this year, or this is going to be different in my family's life, this is going to be different in my life, and you kind of make that New Year's resolution kind of deal, and it never really makes it. And you come to the end of the next year, and you're like, oh, man. And there's something about the close of a year that makes you look back at this last year. You don't do that in June. You know, you don't do that in other times of the year, but as you get towards the end, we all look back. You know, there's all these things that's going to be on this week, and I love watching them, you know, the year in review, you know, oh yeah, I forgot about that. Oh yeah, I remember that, you know. We've had some pretty big events happen in 2009 with our country and entertainment areas and some tragic deaths and stuff like that. And so there's some marks there, and I think it's important that we do look back to gain focus for what's ahead. Or else we lose it, and we just kind of push it aside. And so we're going to talk about focus this morning. A few years ago, I had to go to the optometrist. I've told this story a couple of times where I was down in Houston, Texas, and got held up at gunpoint and got beat up pretty good. And so I get back, and everybody's saying to me, hey, you know, you got beat up pretty good. And I did. I looked terrible. And I got back, and they were like, you know, as many shots to the head as what you took, you probably need to go to the optometrist and that sort of thing. And I needed to go anyway because my glasses were just decimated, you know. So I needed to do something about that anyway. And so I'm sitting there with the optometrist, and I've been to him maybe once or twice before at most, and he's recommended by a friend, you know. And so I'm sitting there, and I was like, so why are you here today, you know? And I'm like, well, you know, it's down in Texas, and this is what happened. He's like, oh, okay. You know, well, let's take a look here. And so you're doing the whole eye chart thing. Well, now, you know, for me, I don't know how many people's eyes are like mine, but I might as well be a bat, okay? I mean, I might as well, God needs to just give me radar, because if I take off my glasses, you all cease to exist, okay? I can see like lights, and they're real pretty because they make bunches of star kind of things, okay? But when I put my glasses on, everything comes into focus. And so he's sitting there, and he's like, you know, okay, start reading the chart. Well, all I can see is the E, just because I know that that's what every chart starts with, okay? And so I'm sitting there, you know, reading down through it, and then he does the thing that I hate to this day, and I mean, I hate it. One or two, do you all know what I'm talking about when they flip the little thing? Okay. Three or four. Well, my eyes are so bad that as he's saying, is this better or this better, I'm like, three? I don't, you know, six, nine, you know, it doesn't matter. Because I'm like, look, dude, we all know where this thing is. Just take those dials and spin it, okay, and get it down to where it goes. Okay, that's what I need. This is no difference. You know, one to two, no difference. He finally pushes that little thing. I don't know what that's called, okay, pushes that thing aside, and he looks at me, and he goes, are you anal retentive or something? Well, first of all, I'm in shock because I'm like, dude, I was hit hard because I thought he just asked me if I was anal retentive and what does that have to do with this, you know? And I was like, and I'm really not. So that was what was even more shocking. I said, no, you know, and he goes, just pick one. And I'm like, okay, I thought we were here to get my eyes. I'm like going, am I in a Seinfeld thing? Who's playing the joke, you know? And so then I'm really trying hard because now that I feel like I'm in a test that I have to answer correctly, you know, instead of getting my eyes right, I just want to give whatever number he wants me to say to him, you know. He's like, three or four. And I'm like, three with a question mark, you know, is that what you want to hear? Five, you know. And he finally pushes the thing away. He goes, you just try way too hard. And I'm like, I'm being humiliated at the, I want to leave. I just want to walk out. And so finally at the end of it, to show just what kind of a jerk he was, I never went back, he looked at me and then started explaining to me, and he knew why I was there. He started explaining to me what he would have done in my situation where that wouldn't have happened to him. Now let me tell you what I wanted to do as a Christian. I wanted to go, "Whack! Did you see that one coming? I don't think you did. How would you have defended that?" Okay? I didn't do that, but I really thought strongly about it because I was never so humiliated. I'm like, dude, I'm just here because, okay, whatever, you know? And I left there going, I don't even want to ever see that dude again. I went elsewhere from that point forward. But, you know, when we go to the eye doctor and what we're trying to get across and what we're trying to do is get in focus. We want to make sure everything's correct. So let's look at Matthew chapter 14, verses 22 to 33. Jesus has just fed the 5,000, and here's what it says. Immediately after this, Jesus insisted that his disciples get back into the boat and cross to the other side of the lake while he sent the people home. After sending them home, he went up to the hills by himself to pray. Night fell while he was there alone. Meanwhile, the disciples were in trouble far away from land, for a strong wind had risen and they were fighting heavy waves. About 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came toward them walking on the water. When the disciples saw him walking on the water, they were terrified. In their fear, they cried out, "It's a ghost." But Jesus spoke to them at once. "Don't be afraid," he said. "Take courage. I am here." And Peter called to him, "Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come to you walking on the water." "Yes, come," Jesus said. So Peter went over the side of the boat and walked on the water toward Jesus. But when he saw the strong wind and the waves, he was terrified and began to sink. "Save me, Lord," he shouted. Jesus immediately reached out and grabbed him. "You have so little faith," Jesus said. "Why did you doubt me?" When they climbed back into the boat, the wind stopped. Then the disciples worshiped him. "You really are the Son of God," they exclaimed. So let's talk about this passage this morning as it relates to focus. I don't know about you, but this last week, ironically, as I was getting ready for this message, the thing that I struggled with the most was focus. It just seems like that at this time of year, when you've got Christmas and then New Year's, there's these 2 weeks that I'm like, what do I do with my life in these 2 weeks? It's always weird, isn't it? You know, you're on work, off work, and sometimes your work is, you know, on the day or after the day of Christmas, and it's always weird, you know? I never can seem to function very well, and I was really trying hard to focus. It was also funny to me that at our growth group this last week, the one subject came up about what happens when you're trying to concentrate reading a book, or how do you do your best thinking? You know, and everybody was talking about, oh, if I got music going on, I can't concentrate. Or some of them, if you're, you know, like some of them in the room, they were talking about how they'll be reading pages out of a book and turning, and they know that their eyes have read every word, but they were like, dude, I just flipped several pages. I don't remember any of it, okay? Some of us are like that. I can't at night, I can't go to sleep listening to music. Okay, my wife will tell you when we were first married, she always loved to have something on. That leaves me wide awake for hours at a time. And I'm trying to be the good new husband thing, you know, and at 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm miserable, okay? And I'm just like, and the reason is, for me, music was what I always studied. So my mind enjoys the music, but it's also beginning to dissect it, okay? It's not relaxing. And it's been going, oh, that was a pretty cool chord progression. Wow, you know, that's pretty cool. Hey, what instrument was that they were playing with? And my mind is just, and I can't fall asleep. I can't get there. My focus is totally on this stuff with music. With Sherry, it's like, whoa, you know, and she's asleep in 10 minutes. For me, it's hours. And I finally said to her after a couple of nights, I cannot fall asleep with music on. She's like, what? But maybe you're kind of like that. You got to have music on in order to focus. For me, I have to have music or something going. I can't have it totally still. Okay, a library is not a great place for me. I need like a Panera or something like that where there's some stuff going on, and boy, I can really focus in. For many of this room, you've got some things that you can focus in on, and you place yourself in the right environment, and you're ready to focus. I want us to look at this passage here and talk about focus. So here's the disciples. They've just watched this feeding of the 5,000. Actually, more than that, they just counted men. Okay, so you count the women, children, everything else, you're talking 15, 20, 25,000 people or more. So he's fed all of these people. Jesus goes up onto a mountain to pray. He sends him out in the boat. And by the way, this is a sidelight. This is not part of the message. But if you've ever wondered this and you've ever questioned this, yes, it's true. Jesus will send you out into a storm. Jesus was not shocked by going up on the mountain to pray and going, oh my goodness, look at the disciples, they're in trouble. I had no idea. Shame on me for coming up here to pray. I would have never sent you guys out here. Because scripture tells us, man, he's walking on water, he's going to pass them by. John records this scripture and he says that Jesus was about to pass them by. Can you imagine? You're in a boat, you're rowing, it's wind and waves and stuff's going crazy, and all of a sudden there goes Jesus walking right past you. No wonder they freaked out. First of all, they're not getting anywhere. Terrible storm, and here's this apparition just going right across the water, and it said if they wouldn't have shouted out, you know, over in John, he records the same thing, if they wouldn't have shouted out, Jesus was going to pass them by. So know this, it's a sideline, it's not the main point of this morning. Yes, Jesus will send you into a storm, okay? He knows exactly what's happening, he knows where you are, he knows what's going on, but there's a huge test in this. And so here's the disciples in the boat, man, they're rowing with everything they've got, they're getting nowhere, and they realize, man, we're in big trouble. Now then, it's worse. They're seeing ghosts, okay? They're seeing stuff walking on the water and all of this. And then when they cry out, ah, oh, it's a ghost, and they're freaking out, Jesus says, hey, man, be of good cheer. I love it. In the middle of the storm, everything's going berserk. And Jesus is going, put on your happy face. Isn't this great, guys? You ought to be happy. We're not happy, you know. We're not comfortable with our situation right now, Jesus, okay? To put it very mildly to you, we don't like this. And he's going, be of good cheer. Why? Not because of the storm, but he says something very critical here. He says, it is I. And the actual Greek is this. It's the phrase, ergo am I. It's what Moses heard with the burning bush when God said to Moses, I am. When Moses started protesting and saying, I can't go, send somebody else. What am I going to say to Pharaoh? What am I going to say to all these people? And God kept coming back and saying, tell them I am sent you. Now for us, we go, what does that mean? I am. That's kind of weird. That's just dumb. If I showed up and said, hey, folks, this is what we're supposed to do as a church, and you said, we protesteth, okay? And if I said, well, I heard from the I am, you would go, what? You mean Ian? No, the I am. You'd go, I don't understand what that means. What it literally means is this. God said to Moses, I will be what I have been. In other words, you need to know me personally, Moses. It doesn't matter what anybody else is asking. It doesn't matter if they protest. It doesn't matter if they all take up stones to stone you to death. You need to know the I am. And so Jesus is walking across the water. The disciples are freaking out. And Jesus says something very cool. He said, hey, guys, it's the I am. The burning bush has been replaced with the floating boat. And Jesus says to him, it's the I am. Man, they recognize that name. See, for us, we would go, well, what is that? For them, they heard something very different. They were like, whoa, something is saying that he is not a ghost. He's God. Let me ask you about this last year. How focused in were you on relationships? How focused were you in on exercise? But you're going to do better this next year, right? Right? We always say that. Oh, you know, we're going to start out. And then by March, you know, if not before. So what's going to be different? You've got to learn to have some discipline of focus. See, the Latin is where we get the word focus for. It's a really cool concept. It's a picture word. It's not this wordy definition. The little word for focus means hearth or fireplace. In other words, it's where you burn with the passion of what God's given you to be. When we talk about focus, focus isn't just about a lens or looking at something very clearly, but it's taking all the energies that God has placed within you to fulfill what he's given you. See, the problem is our focus gets off, doesn't it? We think about 1,000 things, and stuff pulls us away, and we're like, you know, this next year I'm going to do better with some of my relationships. I'm going to really care about people. But then our focus gets off. You know why? Because it's not the hearth. It's not the burning center of who we are. That's where we've got to get to. You know why exercise gets off? Because we're not really that excited about getting up at 5 a.m. or going after work. See, it's not burning within us. Let me ask you this question. What about your finances? How have you done with that? Say, oh, no, this next year, man, I'm going to do better. We're going to save more. We're going to be able to give more. Not if it's not the burning center. You got to make it the hearth. In other words, the absolute center. What I love about Peter here, as much as we bashed him for sinking and stuff like that, he's the only one that got out of the boat. Okay? There's only two people who's ever walked on water. Jesus and Peter. Okay? So I know we look at this and we go, well, he should have had more faith. He should have done this. He walked on water. You haven't. We could learn something from Peter here. Yes, positive and negative of what not to do. But have you ever said this? If God were just more tangible in my life, I would have more faith. See, because I want to interchange this morning the words faith and focus just a little bit, because it really runs one and the same. See, when Peter's focus got off, what happened? He lost his faith. When your focus gets off, you begin to lose faith. You start looking at your finances going, how can we do this and how can we? And all of a sudden, the wind and the waves. So when we look back at this passage and we say, what kind of things do we need to get back in focus? In other words, where is the hearth? Where is the fireplace of my life to be? Remember, I asked you at the very beginning, if you were to define in one or two sentences what your life is all about. In other words, what I'm saying to you is where's the burning center? Because Satan is great at distracting. Man, he just has us fighting fires all the time. Instead, we don't understand the very fire that God's put within us is going out because we're fighting fires. And sometimes you've got to be intentionally negligent, okay, about stuff that isn't yours, stuff that God hasn't called you to. You can't save the planet. I know you think you can. You can't save the planet. But you can be who God's called you to be. See, everybody that comes by your house or into your life and ask you to be a part of something, you're like, oh man, it is a good cause. Yeah, I need to get on board. Oh yeah, it is a good cause. And you know what you do? You spread yourself out so much that you lose the very burning center, and then we do what we call getting burnt out. You know what burnout's a result of? Lack of focus. Lack of focus. Of being able to say no to the things that are good and yes to the things that are God. There's a lot of good things. But there's going to be a few things that God calls you to and us as a church to. See, when Gateway was starting, we said we're going to have a vision and we're going to have a mission. Our vision is very simple. Most of you know it. If you've been in here once or twice, it's very easy to remember. You've probably seen it on the signs or on the website. Love God, live in community, serve the city. That's the vision. Mission is in downtown Cleveland, okay? It's very centered, very focused. We're not going to run out to Bainbridge, okay? We're not going to run out to North Olmsted. Are there needs in North Olmsted? Absolutely. Are there needs all across the city? Absolutely. We can run around doing a lot of good things, or we can do God things. We're going to be very focused in what we do. We're going to lead people to love God, live in community, serve the city. That's what we're going to be about. We also said the way that we're going to help transform the city is we're going to be a church planting church. Now, let me explain to you how that's happened and the impact of it. We've more than doubled our ministries by planting another church rather than building a building for ourselves. And it cost us very little. This last Sunday, Pastor Dan over at Gateway West, he and I usually talk on Sunday afternoon. They had 107 there this last Sunday. That church wouldn't exist without this church. You don't believe me? Call Dan. He'll tell you, I saw and heard Alex saying he was going to downtown. I thought that was the dumbest, craziest idea I've ever done, ever heard of. He said, now then, here I am going to go plant a church. It was the inspiration and the motivation that they began to draw out of there. They put together a launch team, and now then the people in the area are going. Now then these single moms who are homeless and their little kids are going from Laura's home. You see, what happens is we were focused. The hearth, the burning center was, we're going to love God, live in community, serve the city. We're going to plant churches to help transform the city. Now, we could have done a ton more ministries throughout this church, and we would have never have duplicated what's happened through that new church. It would have never have happened. We had to be focused to say, you know, we don't have a whole lot of dollars, but we leveraged every network we knew of. We're calling people. I've got a guy that's coming in as a missions pastor in the middle of January to check out what Dan and them are doing. They're coming up and possibly going to partner with them. You know, we've leveraged everything we can. And we've been intentionally negligent about other things, not because they were bad, but because we knew if we're going to make an impact, this is how we make our impact. This is the end game for us, if you will. We continue to plant churches so that they will impact their community, because there's only so much we can do, but we can do all of it together. We can make that kind of an impact. Now, I don't know if you've ever read this story before. You've probably heard it if you've been around church a lot. You know, Peter walking on the water, and, you know, he saw the waves, and he sank, and Jesus saved him. You know, it's a good moment, you know. You can just see it in the movie. And then Jesus looks at him and says, you should have had more faith, and they crawl back in the boat, you know, and they get to the other side. But one thing is lost in here that the translators missed, okay? The translators, when they looked at this scripture, it literally says this: when Peter saw the wind, it doesn't talk about the waves. But see, for all of us, we go, well, no, he saw the results of the wind. He saw the waves. Well, folks, he had already been in a boat, battered about. The waves were nothing new. When he stepped out on the water, it wasn't calm. He had already taken a few steps and realized, hey, I can do this. Let me tell you what was going on here. God took Peter to another level. And he says, Peter, you've come and you've got some faith, but let me show you how much more you've got to go. Because see, if Peter would have walked on the water and it all went well, he got back in the boat, what kind of guy would Peter have been? Did you see what I did? Did you see what I did? You didn't do it. You didn't do it. I did it. Okay, pride. And Jesus knew this. You had faith to walk on the water, Peter. You had more than these other guys, but I'm not going to let you talk about it. God opened up his eyes. Peter didn't see the results of the wind. He saw what Jesus saw. He saw what God sees. See, when God asks you to do something, he takes the invisible and makes it visible. And you start going, ah. See, when I asked you earlier, you know, the thing of if God were more tangible, you would have more faith, you know, right? You know, if God were just more tangible, I'd have had more faith. It wasn't any more tangible at that moment for Peter. He's walking on the water. Wouldn't you say my faith is going to increase, right? Just as soon as God showed him the wind, well, I can't combat that. I walked on the water, but God can't do this with my life. I've reached my limit. I want to give you your good practical stuff for this morning. God will call you to a place you can't go on your own. God will always call you to a place that you can't go on your own. In relationships, you're going to think, man, I'm just not that good with helping people and serving people. That's probably where God's going to start calling you to. For some of you, it's in finances. It's like, well, one of these days I'll get my finances straight, and then I can start giving, and then I can start doing. And that's your wind. That's the wind that scares you. If I let go of this, then I won't have that. What you don't realize is God can do more with your 90% than you'll ever do with your 100%. But the wind's keeping you back. Because it's like, well, I kind of trust God for my salvation, but I don't know about all this other stuff. I just don't see how I'd add up. And so suddenly the invisible becomes visible and you start to lose faith. And what you thought would give you more faith actually makes you go a little bit backwards. And for some of you in this room, it's exercise. Or for some of you in this room, it's spiritual growth. And God's going to start calling you out and saying, those who follow me learn how to walk on water. And the intrinsic inside detail of this is not only will you walk on the water, you're going to see the wind. And instead of your faith being sometimes strengthened, it's going to be challenged. Because you're going to take a risk and you're going to think, oh, well, God's always kind of helped me. And you look back, yeah, God's always kind of helped me. And then he's going to put the wind in front of you and say, deal with that. You're going to go, oh, I can't do that. And Jesus is going to look at you and say, how come you don't have much faith? See, we think if God were just more tangible. No. The more tangible that God becomes, sometimes the more difficult, the more faith that we have to have. So if you were to define your life in one to two sentences, what are you about? Who are you? What's the end game? Where's your focus? Where's your faith? I don't know about you, but sometimes I'm embarrassed to look back at a year and go, what was I really all about? I lost days, weeks, months. Don't even remember a bunch of it. And the reason is it was meaningless. I didn't do anything with meaning behind it. See, we don't forget those times. We don't forget serving people. You ever been on a missions trip or anything before? You don't forget that, but you'll forget parts of vacations. You'll be like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. You don't forget parts of mission trips. You don't forget parts of serving. Why? Because God puts it within our very soul that this is what matters. And when it's all blown to the side, we go, oh, this is the core. My prayer for us as we move into 2010, my focus, if you will, for this next year, this is what I'm going to be eating, living, breathing, every part of me. When I ask our leadership team to be a part of this and our church to be a part of this, is this one component, my focus, the fireplace of my life, if you will, that people wouldn't just attend Gateway, but they would be Gateway. Not for me, but for their benefit, for future church plants. See, I'm firmly convinced, and I'll just go ahead and tell you this, and then someone can tell me where I'm wrong. And that's fine. I'd love to see this place. We're the only church in America that has planted a church larger than us. Now think about the ridiculousness of that. I mean, when you go to conferences, man, I'm supposed to walk in as a pastor and say, we run 1,200 and we planted a church. They run 120, you know. You don't walk in and say, oh, we got about 80, but we planted this other church. They're much larger than us, because they're like, well, what are you doing wrong, you know? Now, they don't ask you that, but that's what they're thinking. You don't walk in as a pastor saying, yeah, we pretty much suck as a church, so we planted this other church, and they like them a whole lot better, you know? They're great over there. That's not what you go and say. You say, yes, we built a $10 million building. We house 1,500 people. We're doing three services. They come to hear me. You don't walk around saying, hey, they're already bigger than us. Because then go, I'm not listening to him, you know. What's that other guy doing right? It's a good thing. You know what it is? It's not just walking on the water, it's seeing the wind. And if I could get people who just attend Gateway to be Gateway, there's a whole lot more out there for us to be a part of. A whole lot more. I know all of these people that are being baptized over there and meeting Christ. They're doing baptisms again next week. The cool thing is here, we're going to do a bunch of baby dedications, man. It's going to be really cool. You might want to hold your nose depending on time and moment for the babies, okay? Because they just go when they want to go. But we're going to have all these babies up here, and we're going to start out the new year with new birth, and man, it's going to be exciting. But my hope is that we don't just have physical birth going on, which always brings a lot of excitement, but spiritual birth where people are meeting Jesus, and that we can say, okay, we've helped get this church started. Is there another place that we can go to? Is there another church planter? Is there another place that we can go in and really make a difference? And not just double or triple our ministry, but now then it's five or six, seven times. Because, see, the challenge for Gateway West is that within about 2 years or so, they're supposed to plant another church. Do you see the impact now? This isn't just walking on water. This is seeing the wind going, how are we going to do this? I don't know. But with God, all things are possible. Let's pray. Father, it is so easy for us as humans to lose focus. And Satan sets up a lot of good things and certainly a lot of temptations, but sometimes, Lord, I've settled for the good things and not the God things. Father, in relationships, instead of it always being a God thing, it was just kind of a good thing. With my spiritual growth, sometimes it was a good thing, but not always a God thing. Lord, I thank you that we can be a part of this church plan on the west side that we look at and we realize now, man, that wasn't just a good thing. That's a God thing. Only God could open up a church in Cleveland when so many people are closing the doors. And so, Lord, I pray that you'll increase our faith, that we won't just sit around and wait for some kind of a tangible moment with you and think that that's going to solve all of our faith and focus dilemma. But, Jesus, that we will realize that not only do you call us to walk on water, but you make the invisible visible. And that we wouldn't be terrified by that or afraid by that, but that we would totally rely on you, and that we would hear your voice in the middle of those storms, in the middle of the doubt, in the middle of the confusion, in the middle of trying to get our focus and our faith restored, hearing you say, I am here. The I am is with us. So God, as we close the chapter of 2009, and we look to 2010. May our hearts burn. May the fireplaces within our hearts be totally consumed by who you are. God, don't let us settle. In Jesus' name, amen.